In today's episode, we'll discuss the crucial role of diversity, equity, and inclusion in shaping the workplace of tomorrow and driving social impact. We'll explore how companies tackle the challenge of making the workplace and the world a better place for their employees and society while navigating uncertain economic conditions. Let's make a social impact. Hi, everyone. I'm Amy. Welcome to The Social Impact Show, a channel where you get the latest strategies and tips to help you scale and grow your CSR and goodness programs. Today, my guest is Catherine Longhi. She is a diversity and inclusion consultant and has supported major global brands throughout the world, facilitating their programs and conversations around DEI, talent and learning initiatives. So, Catherine, without further ado, I'd like to start the conversation by talking about kind of how you define diversity, equity, and inclusion in the context of the workplace and why these principles are so crucial for companies today. So before we go into the deeper conversation around DEI, really grounding ourselves in how you define diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Yeah, thank you, Amy. And thank you so much and the whole Benevity team for having me here today to be able to share my thoughts, views, opinions. I'm going to start with my own personal definition of DEI and then maybe a more classical definition. So for me, really simply, and I've been doing this work for close to 8 years now, DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, is simply humans. It's about humans, treating humans like humans and creating workplace where humans have equal value. That's just very simply what I've found throughout the years doing this work, the easiest way to boil it down. But one of the things that complicates DEI work is defining it, because there is so much confusion out there. So diversity really simply is about difference. It's about counting the difference, clarifying all of the different ways that people are different.
Yeah.
Equity is about creating your systems, your processes, so that your infrastructure is created in such a way that that diversity can really flourish, so that you have an inclusive, a space that includes everyone. And that's where the real culture shift, that's where the real juice and the real opportunity of DEI comes from. And I would say, because we went DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, I would actually say diversity is what people talk about the most. That's kind of the loudest conversation around DEI. And that's one that people often get confused by or upset by, or, you know, this is where it's almost like diversity is divisiveness these days. People find it really hard to talk about, but inclusion will give you the access. Inclusion is the culture change that will give you the access that will help humans create your systems and processes for it. So there's kind of, I sort of see them as phases of, depending on where your organization is at, what kind of conversation or what kind of phase that organization will be in. And I'm just going to pause there because I could tell you a whole lot more, but I'm not going to on that question.
Brilliant. So I think, yeah, we kind of see a similar definition on our side as like an overarching term to that encompasses kind of the programs, policies that you mentioned and practices that support a diverse, equitable and inclusive workplace. And I know that I'm sure that you're very familiar with this, but over the last year, DEI teams have been, you know, affected by kind of the economic downturn, and despite rapid growth over the last few years, because of the social and racial justice movement that's been happening, DEI teams are facing cuts and job fatigue, and also in some cases political backlash. So, however, DEI is still very much top of mind for employees, and just drawing on one of Benevity's recent reports that we launched around workplace DEI, we saw that 66% of employees believe their company should commit more time and resources to DEI initiatives than they currently do today. So an important part of the equation is making sure that we can show and measure the success of impact of our DEI initiatives within the companies we work in. So I'd love to know how do you recommend measuring success of DEI initiatives, and what key indicators or metrics do you find most valuable?
So I'm going to answer that in two parts. First, I'm just going to address the fear around, oh gosh, DEI programs are shrinking, companies are spending less money on it. My take on that trend is not because the work is less important. I think that trend is a result of the ineffectiveness of DEI programs to actually deliver what business leaders want to deliver, and that oftentimes in organizations, DEI is still seen as a like an extra nice to have. Oh, once we've taken care of what's really important, like making money, taking care of our clients, growing, paying people, then we'll focus on DEI. And I think it needs to be the other way around. So this is my shout out and call to action for DEI professionals out there. Like, we've got to align it with what the business is trying to accomplish so that they see DEI as a means to an end to deliver their business objectives. So don't worry, nothing to worry about. We just need to tweak, pivot, change our approach a bit. And on the measurables, so why aren't business leaders, what are they measuring so they can decide if DEI programs are a success or not? This is so important. And oftentimes I see DEI professionals focusing on, or just organizations focusing again on that diversity piece. So measuring the personal characteristics of people. So we've got two of these, three of these, four of those, we're counting race, ethnicity, gender, gender identities, disabilities, LGBTQ plus, like each of those letters, we're going to count this, we're going to count that. And actually they spend so much time counting personal characteristics that they kind of get frozen and stuck on, okay, so what are we actually going to do? So I think it's really important that as DEI professionals and business leaders, that what we're measuring for DEI is directly related to what the business is measuring for its business results. So for example, if efficiency is something that's often in organizations, we need to be more efficient. Okay, well then if we have different brains around the table, different types of people, if we have diverse groups that are functioning from the result of an inclusive environment, we will be more efficient. There will be less time wasted. So I always, when I start with any organization on their DEI journey, I start with just the what they have in the organization for their people characteristics, because they'll already have that, but also what they want to accomplish as a business so that we can create some almost middle metrics. So what do we want to shift that's going to make a result to both of those things? Because they're interconnected, interrelated. They're like yin and yang, interdependent with each other. Does that make sense? Because like, how does that sound when I say
that? 100%. I think especially in this kind of time that we're in right now, being able to tie it back to the business needs and how kind of having a more diverse, equitable, and inclusive workforce can actually drive those business needs, as we know it can, right? So I think that's really smart and kind of leads on to the next question I had, which was kind of around how you see DEI strategies shaping the future of the workplace. So I love how you kind of start with the strategy being what are the business needs, then mapping that to the deliverables. So kind of how do you envision DEI strategies shaping the future of the workplace, and what changes should we expect to see from that?
Yeah, I'm going to be controversial again, because the more and more DEI strategies I help create, the more I'm wondering, is this actually the right way forward, or should I just be embedding it in all the other strategies? And I'm of two minds, and I think it depends on the size of the organization, where they are, what the maturity is in their DEI journey. And I would say maybe the newer they are on the journey, and therefore the less just the less mature they are, a strategy is good because it's something that can be launched and talked about, and it's global, and it's a big intervention. Rolling out a global DEI strategy is a massive, massive intervention. So I think the earlier the company is in their journey, probably the more beneficial that is. And I would say, because I've worked in 7 different sectors in this work, so I have seen a real broad range of maturities and industry related, just where people are at in DEI in different industries. And the more advanced or the more mature I would say an organization is, I would say the less necessary it is, because it's so embedded. And I'll give you an example. I came across an organization last year in the mining sector in Australia. And this is a BHP mine. It has shockingly great gender diversity. It's 40% women, 60% men. It has racial and ethnicity diversity. And 40% women in mining, and we're talking the real digging rocks out of the ground and going in caves and the real, real heavy manual labor kinds of jobs. Interestingly, 40% gender balance, or 40-60% any kind of different spread when you have a majority group and a minority group, you don't need to get to 50% to have the benefit of that balance. Getting to 40% already tips you into you get the full benefit of that gender balance. So you'd think, oh my gosh, this mine in Australia, everyone's got to be talking about this. And there's very little press about it. I only came across it because I was doing research in the sector. And what that taught me, when you read, they do have a little blurb on their website about this particular mine. And when you read it, they don't even mention, I think the word diversity comes up maybe twice, and the word inclusion comes up maybe 3 or 4 times. But when you read the case study, you're just reading, this is a great place to work. So where they are in their journey, they don't need big, massive interventions. They need just very, very subtle pulse points, check-ins, kind of just nudging them along. So that's a long way of answering. I think strategy comes in different places for different phases of your organization.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think you kind of linking a little bit in terms of like the public kind of sharing of that kind of information. We also saw in the report I mentioned earlier, the state of workplace DEI, is that DEI is critical to attracting and retaining talent as well and building employer trust. I think we saw 95% of employees now weigh a prospective employer's DEI efforts when choosing between job offers. So kind of making sure that you are sharing that information in a clear and kind of compelling way, I think is really important, as you were referencing that example there. Is that something that you notice when working with companies? And do you think it's a positive pressure that will help companies reach the next level in cultivating that workplace culture where every employee feels a sense of belonging?
Yeah, I think this is really important. And when I read that, I wasn't surprised. I wouldn't have been surprised if it was 100%. And I think that 5% missing is just a majority group. It's just the minority of the majority group not checking it out. Everyone I come across, it's one of the very first things they look for in employer. I'm leaders, if you're listening, ignore this at your peril. This is so important. And I would say I would place this on a spectrum. This is one of my measures of an organization. This spectrum is the inner outer kind of inner organizational work and outer impact or outer branding, where 10 out of 10 is like, you are just like everything great about your DEI. You are just putting it out there. You are shouting about it on social media. You've trained up all of your managers to drink the Kool-Aid and share about it in interviews. You're just like 10 out of 10 is like, you are just putting it all that great stuff out there. And at the other end of the spectrum is the inner work the organization is doing, that leadership development or line manager support or the really, really great work that ERGs, employee resource groups, are doing is kind of the other end of the spectrum, like a 1. And this is about really balancing, having a great balance between how much you shout externally and how much you work internally on your organization. Because if you're only shouting about all the great stuff, people may find inside, they're like, that's not really what it's really like here. And people inside will feel resentful, like, no, that's not the way it really is. Equally, if you're doing all of the great inner work, but you're not sharing about that externally, then you're not maximizing the attraction benefit. So I always encourage, and it's very easy for organizations to be towards the upper end, the sevens, the eights, the nines, because it's more comfortable to share about how great you are than really acknowledge some of those things that you're not so great at, that if you looked at and dealt with would really accelerate not just DEI in your organization, but also your business results and like everything that you want in the business. Did I answer all of those questions?
Yeah, there was a few in there, but yes, I think just as we talk about, as you mentioned, acceleration of DEI, something that always comes to mind, and I'd love to hear your take, is around employee resource groups or ERGs and how, you know, they are critical in fostering connection and between employees, whether that's based on shared characteristics or lived experiences. And so I'd love to kind of shift the conversation a bit towards ERGs and how you see their impact in organizations and how they can help serve as a catalyst for broader organizational change and eventually policy influence as well.
Yeah. ERGs, employee resource groups, are so, so, so important. I am a massive fan, if you can't tell already. And I'll tell you why. And I'm going to speak to the power dynamics in the organization, which kind of has three. I think of it like a triangle. It's got three main power sources or stakeholders, which is the employee resource groups themselves, the senior leaders who sometimes aren't so sure how to interact with the ERGs, and also line managers and middle management. So the reason why ERGs are so, so important is because these are the authentic voices of your different kind of people in your company. This is this employees vote what is important to them and mobilize themselves around it. I know because I come across a lot of line managers and a lot of leaders who have a lot of fear around these groups, like, oh God, they're going to run amok. And sometimes they do, just because you haven't got the power balance right in your organization. Here's the benefit to leaders. So the benefit to the organization is these is your authentic employee voices telling you what is important to them. And they're willing to do something about it. They want to do something about it. They just need leaders. They just need your help. They just need a couple of you to join in with them, to give them a little steer of who to talk to when and how, so they can be the most effective. They're going to take a lot of work off of you, because if you're uncomfortable with race or LGBTQ+, or how do I talk to someone with a hidden disability? Like, if you're uncomfortable about what the company message should be, because you feel like as a leader, you've got to know it all, you've got a consultation group. Go and talk to your ERGs. Like, they will help you. They will support you. And then to line managers. I know line managers, you get stuck. Leaders are telling you things, what to do. And then your people are joining ERGs and you might feel a bit like, oh God, what are these things? And I've got to do that. You might feel pulled between these groups. Well, just take a steer from your leadership and also join what you want to join, because it's really great having managers in these groups. So don't feel like you've got to be one management or in the groups. Like, just bring your authentic self to all the spaces, and you don't have to be involved in them if you don't want to be. As a minimum, just be supportive of your employees who do want to be. But if there's something that is really important to you that you want to be a part of, and you feel like, oh well, I'm not sure because I'm a manager, like I'm not sure how that would look, just go for it. Just be you. Drop the line manager bit for an hour a month and just go with it. So that's why ERGs are so important. I just wanted to speak to the different groups a little bit individually, because they often get entangled up with each other. Like, what can I do here?
That's so true. And I suppose maybe you probably have a lot of examples of how of some successful ERG programs from companies you've been working with or the ones that you've worked in before. Do you have any examples that others can learn from the positive impact that they had on the employees, but also the organization maybe at large?
I think the best, the strongest ones I've seen have, what has made them strong is a little bit the history. So they were created as grassroots movements because people wanted to organize around them, because people felt it was important. And that's really important for the origin story of ERGs. Equally, sometimes companies, especially the bigger you are, they might just go, okay, this year is the year we roll out ERGs. We're going to have six. It's going to be these six. You can join them. Here's how you join them. And they start with the structure. The strongest ones I've found have really started more organically than structurally. And the reason why that's powerful is because the employees from the origin have been the ones driving it. So that's extremely powerful. The strongest groups I've ever seen in a company are in a global education business. So a business that has a very, very strong social impact mission and purpose. So it's no coincidence that employees in this kind of company would want to create ERGs and go about creating them with little fuss because of the nature of the enterprise. But what worked really well about them is that the employee resource groups were really almost autonomous. They were really driving themselves, and they were just linking in with some coaching. They were just linking in at the right time in the right places to the structures that already existed in the organization. And that's because they created a few really great allies who were in leadership positions. So not all leaders have to be in these things, but a couple of leaders in employee resource groups are really powerful. And the other thing that was powerful about them is that these groups were really about what was important to all employees. These weren't DEI resource groups. So, for example, there were your classic personal characteristics groups. There were like three different ones for women. There was race and ethnicity, LGBTQ+, neurodiversity, a few other classics. And then there was an environmental one. Then there was a giving, an impact one that was a combination of charitable giving plus just people could create, if they didn't find themselves in the other 13, because there were 14, they didn't find themselves in the other 13, it was a resource group that specifically helped individuals create projects and programs that they wanted to drive themselves. So that, I think, if you just label these groups DEI groups, you're really missing bringing the whole corporate social responsibility. Like you're missing bringing all of the impact together in one place, which I think is much more powerful.
Yeah, totally. And I think there's a strong connection with kind of how you can find out what are those interest areas of your people and how can you make a stronger impact. So say you're starting your ERG program and you're just trying to see what are our next steps? What are the ERGs that might exist? Because maybe at the corporate level, it's 100% grassroots. And so it hasn't been formalized yet. How do you, as a company, go out and find what are those ERGs that might exist or there might be interest around formalizing?
Okay. Yeah. So I think the best way to go about it, especially if things have just been happening and they're kind of all over the place and you're like, oh gosh, how do we bring this together, is to actually just go and ask people. Go and ask all of the different people. And it's not a consensus of, you're not asking their permission, you're asking their, what is important to them? What do they want to accomplish? What are their barriers? You're kind of making like a list of, this is what people want and this is what they're struggling with. So that your strategy for ERGs or the ERGs you're setting up or the access, the how of how you're going to solve their problems, you're working that out. Then you're creating a solution, whatever that solution is, to all of the different groups that told you their problems. So that sounds simplistic, But what is hard, or what the harder piece is that there will be a wide range of challenges, problems, causes. But the more you've kind of consulted with people, the more they can see themselves in the solution. And even if that solution isn't exactly what they wanted, they feel heard and understood. And when you tell them what the solution is and why you couldn't give them exactly what they wanted, they will understand and they will be your biggest champions. And you're also showing them how to be a DEI leader in how you approach that exercise. So you've also given them a template for their own leadership, that whatever their place is in the solution, whether that's to be an ERG leader or whether that's something else, that they see, oh, okay, this is how you get diverse groups of people together with different needs and work with them to effectively do something together, which cannot be, the value of which cannot be underestimated.
100%. And so have you seen also, I think you mentioned earlier, causes and maybe even kind of nonprofits, how have you seen ERGs work with maybe the CSR department or social impact teams to work together and make a bigger impact as a joint force? How have you seen that play out?
Yeah, I've seen a wide range. I've seen where CSR and ERGs and DEI stuff are like completely different things. Typically, the larger and larger that your company is, the more those will be totally separate things. And I've seen where they're practically the same thing. Typically, the smaller your company is. And I think what works well in terms of getting people working together is, again, just finding that, because your CSR function as a function, just like your DEI function as a function, has leadership, oftentimes different leadership. So again, just like creating ERGs, that's just about understanding, okay, you know, what is this leader's vision? What is that leader's vision? What are the common aspects? And enrolling the people who want to be making a difference in these areas, these are the opportunities for you to work together and to collaborate. This is what we've created as the, this is your platform. This is your space. This is your Yammer group or whatever. This is where this stuff is going to happen. And this is how you can organize. Again, that sounds really simplistic, but there's just such, it's hard to speak generally when there's such a wide range of scenarios and structures and how these things work in organizations. But the more you get together, it's always, I was actually reflecting on this question before I came today. And I was thinking, are DEI and CSR even this? Like, to me, they're actually the same thing, just a slightly different approach to slightly different groups of people. Like, to me, I was like, are they even different? I was really asking myself that. And where I got to was they're strongly, strongly interconnected and only slightly different. So the more you do them together, the bigger the difference is. It's, in fact, I think the biggest challenge is just where these things sit, or the biggest challenge is just where these things sit in an organization. And that is only down to the history of the organization and when they woke up, when they hired their first DEI person, when they hired their first CSR person. And that's just history. So the more these functions can work together. And that's what I always do as a DEI person. Anytime I start somewhere, they introduce me to everyone in HR. And I'm kind of like, yeah. Where are the CSR people? Because it's harder, because sitting in HR, it's easy for me to rally resources, but a lot of the resources we can share together are going to be in the CSR department, which typically sits in another department, which is a shame. So that's my long answer and slightly soapboxy. Come on, get together, CSR and DEI.
No, I think you're right in the sense of it's just breaking down those silos if they are existing, you know, between the DEI and the CSR, and because people are so willing, they're already passionate about these topics, causes. And so if you can kind of find a way for people to either donate to a nonprofit that's linked to that ERG, for example, it's kind of multi functional in that sense, and people are even more inclined to get involved and they feel like they're making an impact. So that makes total sense. And I suppose one other challenge that you have come across and kind of has been on the rise for the last few years is how to engage people in ERGs remotely or in the hybrid workforce that is more and more common these days. So how have you seen kind of ERGs being able to maintain that community and inclusion in virtual environments? And how, as a follow-up to that, how do you see technology playing a role in that adaptation?
I think technology, the pandemic, remote working, I think it's been brilliant for ERGs. It started, so when the pandemic first happened, you know, people who used to meet locally went, okay, it's a monthly Zoom call instead of a monthly coffee. All right, let's try that. So it started as a, oh gosh, how are we going to do this? But what I found is that people in ERGs have increasingly more welcomed, engaged with technology to make it more engaging because it's different. And they've actually found, oh gosh, with technology, I mean, you can survey people really easily. You can be in regular contact really easily. And I always, part of the training I do with ERGs when I'm working with companies is I teach them how to be their own business, so to speak. Like, what's your objective? Like, what are you trying to accomplish this year? What are your goals? What's your plan? Like, what's your team? Have you got everything filled? Like, and I teach them how to be little mini businesses and to collaborate with other little businesses and other stakeholders in the organization, kind of from that business mindset, because then how they use technology will come out of what they are planning. It's not just about turning up, let's have a coffee every the first Monday of the month in the canteen. It's no, what do we want to do? Like, what policies do we want to challenge? What charities do we want to give to? What do women feel they want to develop in their confidence this year? Whatever it is. And then they look at, oh, look, with this tool, with that tool, you can do this. We can have subgroups. And that there's been an amazing shift in the last couple of years. And that I think it was a question of survival, a bit, just a bit like companies, you know, if they pivoted onto technology, then they really accelerated. And if they didn't pivot onto technology, they kind of just went, oh, well, we don't need those monthly coffee chats anymore. But I would say the majority that I've seen have come out even stronger. And that's why the services that Benevity provides are so important, because you make it so easy for people to organize themselves around what's important to them and to measure the results all along the way. And so important, you make it fun. Without fun, nobody's going to do anything. They're not.
100%. It's got to be fun. You actually just reminded me as well, as you were speaking then, and also before when we were chatting about your experience and having worked with really global companies, how have you seen as well ERG programs evolve with not only remote, but also different countries, people dispersed all around the world? How have you seen global ERG programs evolve? Yeah, I would love to just hear that, your perspective as well.
Yeah, I would say this probably comes down to the type of company. I see ERGs forming in two different ways. Either the centralized, we're going to have these globally, here's where you plug into folks, off you go. And I've seen more of a regional, where they're kind of grown in countries first, and then they're like, oh, how do we come together globally? And in both cases, Benevity software is critical in both cases. The pros and cons, I don't think one way or the other is better or worse. It's more just the culture of that organization and how things tend to develop. But there are benefits. The benefits of the starting centrally and then enrolling people to join in is that you can be intentionally, shall we say, intentionally inclusive. So you can kind of make sure, you know, like, let's make sure we've got diversity from country, you know, diversity from background, diversity from level. Like, you can be a bit more directive. And then the benefit of the more organic starting in countries and coming together is that you get the rich diversity coming together so that, in fact, a lot of what I spend my time doing is just linking up people from around the world because they just don't know. The UK is focusing on gender maybe, and then Brazil has got this amazing sexual orientation identity conversation going that the UK is like, you're talking about that? Because we're afraid of talking about that. Like, what are you talking about? And you get beautiful contributions together. So there's no this way or that way. You should encourage it. It's more just know what's right for your organization because it's slightly different how you approach that.
Totally. So I know we're coming towards the end of our episode, but if anyone in the audience wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best place to reach you?
Yeah, send me a message on LinkedIn. I love talking. I think you got that over the last 45 minutes. I love talking about DEI. I love helping people. I love hearing, you know, what are your challenges? What are you afraid of? And that sounds like, oh God, I don't want to message this stranger and tell her what my problems are. But please do, because that's where the biggest difference is going to be made. You know, it's the stuff that you're the most worried about that we tend to bury, that if you're like, oh, just shoot this lady, I don't know, a message. I'm Catherine Longhi. I think there's only three of us on LinkedIn. I'm the one in the UK. So please, please reach out.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Catherine, and have a great rest of your day. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next episode.